You've been listening to What's the Frequency, Kenneth? I'm Paul Fisher.
Like I just said, it's over. But nonetheless, you're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM and on WBAI.org. And if you go to Facebook, I will be starting the Facebook live feed very soon. While I stall for time looking for my theme song. Ha ha ha. And yeah, what else is there to say? Oh, I think I found my theme song. That should do. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and that thing called the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, I am proud and pleased that Cadwell Turnbull is with us. So you better stay tuned. Thank you.
is don't realize you've never been there before. It's only your first time. Maybe I'll give you, maybe you'll try. We shouldn't be happy together.
Harmonies, huh? Really, really a fine sound. Boys to Men with the song End of the Road, as chosen by this morning's guest. Ooh, God, what a horrible noise pulling that microphone over. This is, as I said earlier, you were listening, right? WBAI, New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. Vibrating 99.5 million times every second, in other words, 99.5 FM, and also over WBAI.org, in case you decided to leave the country. We're still there. And as often happens when I have a guest with us, Facebook Live. So I have now successfully, I hope successfully, shared the feed from my timeline, Jim Freund, to the Hour of the Wolf group, the WBAI radio group, and the Cadwell Turnbull group, which is appropriate because that's our guest this morning. Good morning, Gadwell.
Good morning.
Yeah. Oh, it would help if I turned on your microphone. Say that again.
Good morning.
Much better. Much better. I should have turned up your mic in the first place. So, as the podcast editor for Lightspeed Magazine and Nightmare Magazine, God, they've got to fix the cables on these mics. The new studio can't happen soon enough for my taste. Every time I move this thing, it goes crackle, crackle.
You can't hear it in the headphones? It's like a...
Oh, you hear it on the air, yeah.
Oh.
And especially in the headphones. So, but listeners get to share the joy of bad technology. So, I was at ReaderCon. I had a lovely freaking time.
It was awesome.
It really was. Was that your first... You can't be your first ReaderCon because...
It was my first one on... It was my first one on panels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I've gone to... the two before it as well.
Okay, yeah. Very good, yeah. This was my, I don't know, 23rd or something like that. And
damn.
Well, I'm a fan.
Right.
I've been in fandom a long time. At this point, mm-hmm. I don't go to that many conventions. I go to ReaderCon. I tend to go to whatever the local New York Con is, which is mm-hmm. now Heliosphere. And I go to Capclave, which is... like a smaller ReaderCon, it's in the D.C. area. So just like ReaderCon is in the Boston area. It's not in Boston, mm-hmm. but right nearby. And Capclave is actually in Gaithersburg, Maryland. It's close enough that there's a metro stop that'll take you into the heart of D.C.
And it's smaller than ReaderCon?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the numbers. I would say ReaderCon... probably about 800 people this year. Mm. And I would say that Capclave is probably like 600 to 700.
Okay.
But they're similar in the manner that they're both literary conventions. So, you know, not that many panels about, you know, who really died in the last Marvel movie and who didn't. Not so much. You might right. actually end up with some more literary adaptations at Capclave.
Mm.
And in fact, I intend to write them about one that I'll tell you, the listeners. Have you, Cadwell, heard of The City and the City by China Mieville?
Yes.
It was a Hugo Nebula nominee.
Yes.
Did you know that there was a streaming series of it on Amazon? No.
Really?
Yeah, right. You see, everybody has... That's the reaction.
Right now?
Well, yeah, it's on Amazon.
I can watch... Okay.
I mean, not right now. Wait till you get home.
Well...
Or to your hotel, wherever
course,
you're staying. But yeah, it's on...
I did not know that.
It's right now. I could play it on this damn computer. And it's good.
It's good.
It's good.
Is it a good adaptation?
It's close to the novel, which means I didn't understand any of it. It actually illuminated parts of the novel that I had problems with. But
okay.
I found the end of it sort of still puzzling.
So it's a miniseries, not...
It's a four-part miniseries.
Okay.
They tell the novel in four parts. So the first part is in one city.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part is in the other city, that is the city in the city. The third part is in Orsini, the city that they believe exists concurrently. People, you're just going to have to take my word on this and watch the show to understand what I'm talking about here. Because they're parallel cities in the same space and time.
Okay.
And then the fourth episode is called Breach. Which, if you've read the novel, you will remember is something that can transcend... all the cities that are in the same space and time. So it's a murder mystery. China wrote it, and I did an interview with him just when it came out. I should play that on the air soon. And I did an interview with him at his publisher's office just when The City and the City came out. And I was on a panel. I was the moderator of a panel with John Clute and Gary Wolfe and a lot of critic types, Liz Hand. who were talking about the book. And it's a complex book. It's one of those things that you would say, they can't make that into a movie because it's serious literary science fiction.
And they did.
And they did. And they actually...
And they did it well.
They did it well. It's very close to the book. I saw Clute.
I did not hear about this.
This is what nobody has. I came across it by accident. Totally by accident, because sometimes I waste my time just browsing through Amazon and Netflix.
Why aren't they promoting it?
That's a very good question. It stars David Morrissey, who I'm familiar with from a lot of British TV shows, including people may remember that there was a Christmas episode of Doctor Who in which the Doctor, who I think, was it still David Tennant? It may have been David Tennant, encounters somebody who is calling himself the Doctor and has a companion and all that. But it turns out that he's delusional for a very good reason. He was somehow, the memory of the Doctor was implanted in his head. That's David Morrissey. He's done a lot of brilliant British television and a few movies here and there. And he is the lead in The City and the City. And this is a great literary project, and not that many people are going to take it on. But somebody did, and they did a damned good job. And I came across it like 3 weeks ago, totally by accident. You can't binge it.
This is wild.
Because there's only 4 episodes. It is too complex. Too much happens every episode, and you have to let your brain process what you've just seen. It makes Legion look lucid.
You mean Legion, FX Legion?
Yeah. Have you seen
it? Yeah.
Episode 4?
That's hard to believe, because Legion is really weird.
And complex.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's warm-up for The City in the City. Oh, have you read The City in the City?
I have not.
Okay, it's...
I just know because everyone knows about it, yeah.
Yeah, because it's this big literary F deal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this really cool, interesting, fascinating book, as most of Mievel is. But this one, to me, suffice it to say, a body is found. But she was not from the city. We follow a cop.
Mm-hmm.
The body, the woman, murdered woman, turns out not to be from the city in which the body is found. We eventually realize that she's from another city that exists in exactly the same place as in the city we are in. People have been trained to unsee another reality.
If you go against the training, you can see it.
Right.
Okay.
But to go against the training is more than a federal crime. It's a crime against humanity. I can't say much more because...
Yeah, I was going to ask, how much of this is spoilery?
A lot.
Okay.
A lot. Really, it's not...
I'll stop asking.
In fact, when we did the panel, the ReaderCon book club panel about 4 years ago, John Clute started the panel by saying, let's start by saying there's no such thing as a spoiler. And then in the next 15 minutes of the panel, they weren't talking about the book, they were talking about a spoiler. I have learned through an interview I did with Michael Bishop that, in a way, Clute was right. There is no such thing as a spoiler. There are, however, reveals. There are things that the author would like you to discover on the terms, the way the author has laid it out.
Are we talking about Mievel, or is this like a
no.
theory of spoilers?
There's a theory of spoilers altogether.
Altogether?
Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I can tell you who does live and doesn't live
right.
in Marvel's Endgame movie, right?
That doesn't spoil the movie.
It doesn't necessarily. But to find out what happens at the end to Captain America wouldn't spoil it. It would be sad. Because it's actually a really, really cool ending for him.
Captain America. Oh, you mean, you're talking about...
I'm talking about Endgame.
Endgame Captain America.
Endgame Captain America.
It is a good, yeah.
And what happens to him at the end there is like so nifty you could weep.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. And we could tell the listeners. And when they go to see the movie, they'd go, oh, well, they did that well. As opposed to, oh my God, that was cool. Wouldn't spoil it. But the reveal would be taken away. And I was talking with Michael Bishop on the air, as a matter of fact, when his novel Battle Innings was re-released by Tachyon Publications, an independent press out of the Northwest. And there is a point about 70 or 80 pages in when we learn something about the reality of the narrator in the story. And Michael, I said, well, I don't want to give away the spoiler. And Michael said, it's not a spoiler. It's a reveal, which I would rather the readers find out on their own. I thought that was a really nice term and maybe a subtle difference, but a good one. And I understood what he meant. Now, a spoiler is when you say in Agatha Christie, you know, blah, 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 done it.
That's a spoiler.
That's a spoiler. But then I know people like Joanna Russ used to go into a bookstore and she would pick up the latest, whatever Agatha Christie she was looking at. It wouldn't have been the latest, but the latest one published. And she would pick it up and she would read the last five pages. And I'd scream, what the hell are you doing? And she'd say, well, how do I know that I'd like the book? If I don't realize how clever she's being.
Interesting.
Yeah, I disagree. But me when too. I tell that, but when I tell,
but that, I get that. I understand.
Yeah, I get it,
it
too. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's an interesting thought, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've told that story, and a bunch of people say, "Well, she's right. Actually, you're going to invest how many hours into reading the book?" And some Christie just isn't that good. And some of it is wonderful, like the reveal in The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, or obviously Murder on the Orient Express for people who have seen either versions of the film or read the book. Those are sort of like, yeah, you didn't see that one coming, did ya? And if she were to see that and say, ooh, that's clever, then she'd be willing to spend her time on the book. But if it turns out that it's simply the butler done it, she'd buy a different book. So I see her very point.
True. It's a good point.
It is a good point. But I'm of a different personal philosophy.
Yeah, I like figuring it out or trying to figure it out and then being wrong or right by the end.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that she's definitely right. You remember more of the cleverness if you know what's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, yeah, this is really clever. This is really clever. This is really clever. But I think that I still remember moments of cleverness even if I read it chronologically and find out what happens at the end. I'm like, oh, she did this there, there, there.
Yeah.
Right.
My solution, for example, The Sixth Sense is a movie where the end, the reveal is obviously a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would not have wanted to be spoiled for that.
Yeah. And
I'm glad I wasn't.
I took great joy out of watching that film a second time to see how he pulled the reality of what's actually going on in that movie off.
It's quite clever.
It really is clever, and you don't see the cleverness the first time you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes itself evident when you say, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, he had to blow it somewhere, right? And no, you watch that movie a second time is well worth it. It's the only M. Night Shyamalan movie I'd say that about.
I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah, well, no, yeah.
I mean, he's definitely on the top of his form in that one.
Yeah.
It's not just a twist. There's a lot of build up and work being done for the twist.
Yeah.
And so it feels cheap to call it a twist even. It's definitely a reveal.
Exactly.
And everything that you've seen before, it has informed it.
It's exactly. And it's a major reveal. And to tell listeners that would be a spoiler.
Right.
It would, because that would spoil the movie.
It would. It would.
So I disagree with Mr. Clute.
I wonder how many people have not seen this movie.
At this point, probably...
Well, a bunch of young people, I'm sure, have not seen this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Us boomers have all seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And
people my age.
Yeah. And what would you call... What name? Are you a Gen X? What? Are, what
I don't know.
What nasty...
A millennial? I don't know.
You're a millennial. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what they...
Why are millennials call it, all... Well, actually...
It's a really large age group, it seems. It seems like millennial covers a lot of ground.
I mean, the only reason that there are fewer boomers... Is that the boomers are starting to die off, sadly. You know, I now carry a Medicare card. I think I'm 29. I do. But.
What do you, explain that to me. What do you mean?
Mentally, inside.
Okay.
You know, I have the enthusiasm, the thinking, I haven't learned more.
Okay. But, you know, so you feel quite sharp.
At times.
At times.
I mean, when I was 29, there were times when I wasn't that sharp. But that, a lot of that also had to do with whatever chemicals
things
I was playing with at that time.
Talked a little bit about that earlier, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've told some of those stories on the air, and I should not. I should not.
Okay.
Because some of those involve stuff on the air. On the other hand, the good thing is that my preferred illegal chemical is becoming legal in so many places. It's legal by now in Massachusetts.
Where you're
from,
marijuana?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I think it is.
Yeah. I'm thinking about where you can buy it.
Oh, that I don't
still,
know.
I think it's still pretty restricted, but it's changing. It's...
Yeah.
It's getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even when it becomes legal here, you don't want to give up on the person who's been supplying you for so many years, who will probably still be cheaper. There'll be all kinds of... Think about the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the businesses that are putting billions in there and want them back. Nah. Prices are going to skyrocket, but your local friendly neighborhood dealer is still going to be the way to go.
That's a question that I have. How does that change the crime?
Well, it changes the crime by taking away the element of profiling people that are arrested for the crime. In other words, you go to an affluent white neighborhood and you see somebody who is, you know, doping up every day. They're not going to get arrested. Now, you find somebody in the South Bronx who looks like maybe they took a puff 3 years ago and they're on the subway and they're thrown in jail.
Well, that's my question, right? If you can still sell marijuana, your dealer, your local dealer,
it'll be
illegal. Right?
Yeah, they'll still be illegal, and I suppose my purchase would be illegal.
Right. I think that some neighborhoods will be profiled more. Right? That's my question. My other question is, if you're profiled and you're found to be carrying marijuana that's illegal, how does that change the crime? Like, how much... do you serve time? Do you get a fine? What is it?
Oh, I would assume it's going to be a slap on the wrist.
I think that might depend, too.
There was a long period in America where you couldn't have a beer or wine or any alcohol whatsoever. It is still illegal, at least in New York, to be holding an open bottle or can of alcohol and drink it. You can't do that publicly. You can't drink beer on the subway. That's why so many people carry it in a paper bag.
Mm.
And if somebody is caught with a can of beer on the subway, in the 1920s, they would have been guilty of a federal crime and locked up and gone away, especially if they belong to a group of people that the feds or cops wanted to go after. But today, if somebody is caught with a bottle of wine, drinking from it on the subway or on the sidewalk, they'll probably get a fine.
Okay.
So in the long term, I think that the crime will be minor. In the close term, I think there's still going to be huge amounts of racism attached to it. Maybe even exacerbated to a certain extent.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess. It's a very good question.
Yeah. I didn't think about it until just now.
I've never thought about it until you brought it up.
Seems like we're asking for trouble there.
Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's a damn good question. I don't have an answer.
I hope I'm wrong about that.
I hope you're wrong about that, but I have so little faith in Trump's America.
Hmm.
I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of faith in certain aspects of this country. And please, people, don't get me wrong. I am a patriot. But so were all the yippies of the 1960s and the hippies and the people who protested the war in Vietnam. They were patriots, too. They just didn't like the policies.
Mm-hmm.
You can disagree with the politics, but still love your country.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the point, right? You love your country, so you're critical of it.
Everybody listening, did they see me go, you know, pump my fist in the air and go, yeah, you're right?
Wait a second, though. What's a yippie? You said yippies and hippies.
Oh, you youngsters today. Okay, yippies. The yippies were a political party that grew out of the hippie movement. They, in the famed 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, it was the yippies that were demonstrating during there, where they had their own, it was very surreal.
Hmm.
And the Chicago 7, first the Chicago 8, but then the Chicago 7, when Bobby Seale left the group that was being prosecuted and was prosecuted separately. There's Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin. These are probably names you've come across. And Phil Oakes. They started a movement called the Yippies, which was like hippies, but very political. There was music, comedy, politics, and huge amounts of anger. Not quite Black Panther anger, because this is much more white, much more, but not moneyed, but somewhat celebrity-based. So the yippies were a political movement.
So the hippies were not particularly radical? They were more...
I would say not.
Okay.
As a hippie, which I was and probably in many ways still am. The hippies were certainly counterculture.
Okay.
But...
not with that radical bent?
No, not necessarily. One of my favorite news people, why am I blanking on her name? Linda Ellerbee. She used to be on NBC Overnight, and she's done some remarkable things since. But what I remember was NBC Overnight. She was talking as a Southerner, saying, you know, she had left a traditional household in which the woman's role was to, during the football game, bring the beers and cook the food and clean up after the guys while they're watching the football. And then she went and she joined a commune. And at the commune, she rolled the joints and provided the food for the munchies and cleaned up after them. Just how aware were the hippies of that time. You know, it took so many incremental groups of consciousness raising, whether it was women, whether it was blacks. You know, the Black Panther movement was separate for good reason. There weren't that many blacks in the hippie movement. There were some. But there were some.
What happened to the yippies?
They died out. You know, it was of its time. Well, there was a riot in Chicago during the Democratic National Convention. They were painted in a very bad light. There was a trial, of which there have been at least two or three movies made. Medium Cool actually was a movie that was actually filmed during the Chicago riots. And then there's a John Sayles film called like The Trial of the Secaucus Seven, which is metaphor for that. But their time had come and gone, you know, and the hippies and the political activists within the hippies were a culture, not a movement. More to the point, they were a counterculture, or counter to the American culture at the time, and so referred to as a counterculture. But in my opinion, and people can listen to Bob Fast tomorrow night, who certainly was in the middle of the movement, and I don't think has left. I would say in his way, he's still at the center of it in many ways, even though it has sort of like come and gone. I mean, you don't see people in with long hair. You saw a picture of me earlier that I showed you with my hair being what, about 8 to 12 inches long, you know, and
yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I thought so. I can't do that now, but I could do that then. Yeah, and you know, I had curly hair, what people called a Jufro. And yeah, that was very much the hippie movement. Now, within that, some people could be more radical, especially the people that were demonstrating against the war in Vietnam. And a lot of, well actually, you know, the real civil rights things happened, of course, during the early 60s with, you know, Selma and things like that. And then there's sort of a separation at a certain point. And out of that, you get, you know, the people following Huey Newton and friends on one side with the Panthers. And then on the other side, people just sort of still, you know, very political. Jane Fonda going to Vietnam, making a big mistake while she was there. But the she posed in front of an anti-aircraft gun, which she should never have done. But she's an actress, and she goes and poses where people tell her to. And that vilified her to this very day. She's vilified for it. But her intentions were as an activist to show, you know, who's this enemy? Why are we here? What are we doing? And that certainly comes out of the hippie movement. But she could afford to do that. Mm. As daughter of Henry Fonda, even though he was so conservative. But, well, as Jane Fonda, as a major, major actress on her own. But the majority of hippies were lighting up, sitting back and grooving to cool music. So it was more about the culture than it was about the politics. Mm-hmm. We should be talking about you.
This is the first time I've heard about the yippies. But, okay. Yeah, we can talk about me.
Yeah, there are books. So, as I was saying, we're at ReaderCon. We're both having a great time. And on Sunday morning, actually, as I was preparing to leave so we could drive back to New York, by the way, my partner Barbara Krasnoff, who was on the show 3 weeks ago, after 20-something years of not being on the show, even though we've been together 29 years, right? She was on once before. But her book launch was there, and the publisher sold out of the books. It was freaking wonderful. It was really great. But that's not the only reason why I had a good time. It was just a really, really, really good convention.
It was.
Yeah, it was. There's no one thing other than the programming and the people that were there were so good. that it just, there was a vibe that really worked. And as, for example, and as I'm leaving, I see this woman who's an editor at Tor, Diana Pho, P-H-O, and she introduces me to this guy she's talking with, and she says, "Oh, Jim, by the way, Jim Freund, this is Cadwell." I go, "Turnbull? Because how many people are named Cadwell?" I mean, when I first came across his name in fiction, your name in fiction, I'm going, "Yeah, I want to see the birth certificate on that." But now I realize, yeah, no, that's your name.
No, that's it.
That's it.
Right.
And how wonderful to have such a good, unique name. It's, well, it will work for you as a brand, as your light as a writer shines, which it will. I knew the name Cadwell Turnbull because I get to do the audio editing for both Lightspeed Magazine and Nightmare Magazine, and I am the host of Lightspeed Magazine. Good lunar story, by the way, on the edition that of the podcast that will be released tomorrow. And so I've worked on, I believe, 4 of your stories, and I really enjoyed every last one.
Thank you.
And so I bumped my guest, Sam Schreiber, who was supposed to be on this week. He lives in Brooklyn. I figure locals are bumpable over people that are in from Massachusetts and places from further beyond. Jack Dan was there. He came from Australia.
But he did.
Yeah, but he was also en route to Clarion.
Oh.
He's a teacher this year.
Oh. Huh. I think I knew that at one point, and then...
It's about the third or fourth time he's taught at Clarion. Clarion West.
Right.
I should say, not the Michigan Clarion.
I got a chance to meet him at the convention. He was great.
He is great. I knew him when
Inspiring, too.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Very much so. I knew him when he lived in New York. He was one of us. In fact, not far from where we are right now in Brooklyn. And his neighbors... And local people here were, not everybody's remembered, like George Alec Effinger. There was another George who's living about 3 blocks from where we are. George Martin, that was it. I wonder whatever happened to George R.R. Martin. Did he ever get any success? I don't think so.
I've never heard of him.
Actually, I preferred what he was writing then.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not a GOT fan.
Not a Game of Thrones fan?
No. Too much gore.
Okay.
I'm squeamish. Now, you write dark fantasy, and you write stuff that might be classified as horror in some of... Otherwise, you wouldn't have been in Nightmare Magazine. Right. But it's not body horror. It's not stuff that is intended to make you squeamish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different thing.
I did have a werewolf rip 2 people to pieces.
Well, yeah.
In a story.
Yeah. I came across that. That's not the same as on-screen castration.
And, yes, you're right.
And especially on the TV version, intentional, on-screen impaling and gore and that kind of stuff. I can deal with violence in movies and things like that. But, watching arterial spouting
mm-hmm.
is about where I draw the line. And there's a lot of arterial spouting in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And never mind that some of my favorite actors in the world, from Diana Rigg to Peter Dinklage, and so on and so forth, are in that, and that George Martin can be a wonderful writer. But this, to me, isn't entertainment, where I have nightmares and wake up in a sweat in the morning going, "Ew!" That's not what I want to read. George has written a lot of other stuff, some of which is wonderful. I mean, his short story with Morning Comes Mistfall,
mm-hmm.
Which one, either the Hugo or the Nebula or both, is this really sweet, wonderful, wistful story with a lot. You know, I haven't read it in 20 years. I still think about it.
What's it called? When morning...
With morning...
With morning...
Comes mistfall. In other words, on a planet where takes place in a hotel where every morning, this planet, there's this incredible, gorgeous mist that just sort of consumes the planet, and people go just to watch this, like people would go to see... Oh, diamond crystals in Doctor Who, or on a safari in Africa.
Vacation. Yeah, some like tourism.
Well, that's some... it. It's a tourism hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And the story takes place in a tourism hotel.
Cool.
So it's really poignant, sweet, wonderful, provocative. The ending will have you thinking. For years. Sorry, no reveals, but just people should read it. With morning comes mistfall. And that's a good example of George's short fiction. Really good stuff. And he's written some good novels, and he's edited things like the Wild Card series with people like, ooh, Jack Dann, and Gardner Dozois, Michael Swanwick.
I didn't know Michael Swanwick was in there.
He's at least written for it.
Mm-hmm, cool.
If nothing else. But that was mostly the Boys Club at the time. But we're talking here about the early 70s. But I understand, I haven't read it, but there have been wild card books when people wanted to see Game of Thrones books. George has been writing other stuff. He's been
well, editing.
Cheating on Game of Thrones.
Editing. Other people's stuff, sure.
Yeah, but stuff... He creates the universe, and other mm-hmm. people write into that universe.
Right, but...
So he's actively involved in the creation.
That's true, but it's not the same as, like, stopping and writing another book.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's cheating. I feel like this is, like, a
fun
side project.
Yeah, but it's like everybody's waiting, where's the next book, George? Where's the next book? And to quote Neil Gaiman... People, he said this at a Comic-Con, where everybody was saying, where's the next book? Neil Gaiman took the mic from George and said, people, George R.R. Martin is not HBO's bitch.
He said that?
Yeah, he said that. It's on YouTube.
Okay, that was my next question. Is there a clip that I can watch?
It was at a Comic-Con,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So, of course, there's a clip.
Yeah, yeah. So... everything that happens, Comic-Con gets, you know, gets out there.
Right.
So, I have not yet read your novel. I am only somewhat aware of The Lesson, which is the name of the novel, which is published by...
Blackstone.
Blackstone Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they're one of the better audiobook companies.
They started in the 80s, and they were doing audio for a really long time.
Yes.
I think it was 2014 that they started print.
Yeah, okay.
So it's new.
I heard, yeah, but they are they're actually possibly older than Audible as an audiobook publisher, but they did not have the marketing power
that Audible
has through Amazon. But having said that, they're pretty darn good. And the people that I work with, Skyboat Media, who were the people responsible for your stories on Lightspeed and Nightmare, when they put out audiobooks, they generally come out through Blackstone. They've done two with me. One of them is a series of interviews that I've done called Chatting Science Fiction. And another one is actually an audio book of a novel by Jen Brissett called Elysium. And by the way, Jen Brissett will be at Books Are Magic tomorrow with a bunch of women discussing the native tongue novels.
Oh, dope.
Oh, you know them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, are you in New York tomorrow?
No.
Ah!
I'm heading back.
You're heading back.
Yeah.
Back to Massachusetts.
To Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, Jen Brissett, who, if you don't know her, you ought to meet her. She's a wonderful writer. And she sold the last two books of what started with Elysium. And I got to produce Elysium through Skyboat Media and got it released by Blackstone.
This when you say Elysium, it's not the movie. That's not
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. I just wanted to make sure.
It's a popular title.
Right.
But Jen's book, well, first of all, a lot of it is about the Black experience.
Mm-hmm.
Not in America necessarily, because it takes place in another time, in another place, in another culture, and actually the culture keeps changing as the book goes on. And why? Oh, that would be a spoiler. No, that would be a reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Most people can probably figure it out and won't diminish the joy of the novel. But at any rate, tomorrow they're at Books Are Magic, which is a very cool recent bookstore in Brooklyn, not far from here. I haven't been there yet. I'm looking forward to it because I'm going to go there tomorrow.
It's very cool. It's nice.
You've been there?
Yeah.
Oh, of course, yes. You were interviewed there by Andrew Liptak.
Yeah, I did an event, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'll be going there tomorrow for the first time, and I'll be recording the proceedings for broadcast.
Oh, that's it. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I live for that mm-hmm. stuff. I didn't do that many recordings at ReaderCon this year. Two. But, you know, also going to a bookstore. Unfortunately, there's also a really cool reading happening with Karen Hewler,
mm-hmm.
who's been on the show and is a wonderful writer, and Benjamin Rosenbaum, who comes to this country about once every 5 or 6 years. He lives in Switzerland. Although Liz Gorinsky, this is at Erwan Books, that's Erewhon, a new publisher. I don't think their books have come out yet, but their writers are extraordinary, really top-notch writers. And they're doing what's more like, a little bit more like a salon. And that's tomorrow night. And I can't be at both
sounds
places.
Like fun.
Yeah. Sorry, move to New York, Adela. We need you. You live in a small town, a lovely small town. From the sounds of it.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. New York is a bit... I grew up in the Virgin Islands. New York is a bit overwhelming for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. The U.S. Virgin. The so-called
it's like
US
a
Virgin.
Stark difference. It's like the furthest away you can get. Or at least very far away.
Yeah,
from the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, except that we have boroughs and neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pretty much, I mean, you could find a place that's almost wildlife in Staten Island. Unfortunately, Staten Island is mostly a red state, but...
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's where Eric Garner was killed.
Hmm.
But there are good parts and good pockets in there, and we're here in Brooklyn. It's a pretty nice neighborhood if you ever get to see it during the day. And I grew up in Queens, where there are a lot of different kinds of neighborhoods, including practically farms. So, and there's the suburbs, such as Westchester and Long Island. So, we have many different environments.
Those things that we've been through used to make me happy, now make me blue. I didn't believe the things that I've heard, no. But now I've seen it with my own eyes. I know actions speak louder than words. But Lord, know that I don't wanna be lonely tonight. Granny, know that I don't wanna be lonely tonight. I mean it, yes, I mean it, I don't wanna be lonely tonight. But I would rather to be lonely than to live a dirty life. I'm so sorry we've been true. I'm so fed up, I don't know what to do. Thank you.
All of those things that we've been through. Oh gosh, used to make me happy, now make me blue. I didn't believe the things that I've heard. No, but now I've seen it with my own eyes. I know actions speak louder than words. But Lord knows that I don't wanna be lonely tonight. Granny knows that I don't wanna be lonely tonight. I mean it, yes, I mean it. I don't wanna be lonely tonight. But I would rather to be lonely than to live a dirty life. I'm so sorry we've been through. I'm so fed up, I don't know what to do. Don't wanna be lonely.
Single list alive right here every Thursday. Yeah, every Thursday. Clockwise, Burn, Baby Burn. Your favorite radio station, don't forget 516-620-3602. Give to WBAI as much as you can because we're the super pack to watch your musical back as we walk through the rain. And it's raining on the outside right here, outside the studios right here. In Brooklyn. 99 Cinco List Alive. Sly Dunbar on drums, Robert Shakespeare on bass, Reverend Jones's Doja from Spanish Town, J.A.
Looking at the billboard,
a list of mix,
all so round. Summing up the people, checking out the race, doing what I'm doing, what I'm doing. Out of place. Walking in the rain. Feeling like a woman. Looking like a man. Sounding like a no-no. Make it when I